I have to do things myself once and for all.
Okay, Godspeed. Good luck. Here we go.
Hello and welcome to episode 95 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Hahn.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
So we have a two-review episode for you this week. First, we are going to talk about In the Heart of the Sea, and then we're going to finish up with a review of Joy. First up, In the Heart of the Sea, which Angie is taking.
All right, here is the synopsis. Based on the 1820 event, a whaling ship is preyed upon by a giant whale, stranding its crew at sea for 90 days, thousands of miles from home. So this is supposedly based on the true story that inspired Moby Dick. So, you know, you can kind of guess what it's about. Chris Hemsworth and Benjamin Walker play two of the people on the ship. And, yeah, that's basically, I mean, it's a pretty accurate synopsis. They go out to sea. They're a whaling sea that goes out, and then a whale, I guess, decides to have revenge on them. I don't know. It's the newest movie by Ron Howard, and it's actually the one that we went to a set visit for, like, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So that part
where
of it
our friendship and actually the seed of this podcast was forged. That was the visit where Perry kept being like, we should have a podcast.
Oh my
That's very, very true.
Oh, okay. So this movie brings everything full circle, and it's like a really special moment. Really,
so this is our last episode. No Star Wars. Fuck it. We're done.
Which makes it all the more sad that it's, like, not that good of a movie, in my opinion. I didn't hate it. Like, it's, like, intermittently interesting, but it's... I feel like
I'm sorry, I'm just imagining that on a poster in the Heart of the Sea.
Intermittently interesting.
Angie Hahn / film.
Well, if it wanted a better review, it should have been a better movie. I mean, there are things about this that work. Like, it does, like, there are lots of, like, really beautiful shots. Like, the VFX I thought was really good. Some of the acting is good. Chris Hemsworth's accent is the worst thing that's ever happened to America. Mm. but other than that, but like it's. I feel like I've seen this problem with a lot of movies in general, but survival dramas in particular seem to have this problem where they think that putting people in peril is inherently interesting, but that's not true. You have to give me a reason to care why I care what happened. You have to give me a reason to care what happens to these people. Like, you can't just. You know, tell an actor, like, oh, look like you're suffering, and then assume that I will be riveted and give a damn whether the person lives or dies. And this doesn't do a very good job of that. I didn't think the characters were very interesting.
The movie kind of plays like the Wikipedia version of the story, where it's just like, this happens, and this happens. And it's almost like he's trying to force the whole Melville thing into the story to make it more interesting
to put
like a different, unique spin on it, which
but
doesn't
it's not
work
even
at
almost.
All.
I mean, for people that haven't seen the movie yet, the thing is that I think all three of us read the book. I know Perry and I did.
I did not read the book.
Okay.
Well, the book is so interesting.
It is. It's really dense. It's not like a novel. It is a historical narrative. It's very dense, but it was really interesting. But the thing is that what Howard's like team did was they were like, okay, so Herman Melville actually did go and talk to one of these guys. So we're going to make that. And I thought it was going to be a bookend, like just the beginning and the end, but instead old survivor guy Nickerson, played by Brandon Gleeson, and Ben Whishaw as a Herman Melville keep interrupting the story. It's very Princess Bride. And like, they're just like pop up and go, so tell me more about the cannibalism. And like, that was so frustrating to me because it kept interrupting the flow of the story. And it felt cheap where it was just like, we don't know how to bridge these moments. So we'll just slap more of this in the middle.
Those scenes just didn't add anything to the experience either. Instead, it took you out of the story and it was killing the momentum of what they were going through in 1820, which, you know, the movie is absolutely gorgeous. I think that's what it has going for it more than anything. And I think some of the effects were really well done. For some reason, the whales still didn't sit quite right with me. I can't explain why. It's not like I know the anatomy of a whale and how it moves, and I could say that was wrong, but something about just knowing it was a CG whale, I think, was stuck in my head.
Maybe it's because the whale is acting in a way that doesn't make sense for a whale to act like that.
Well,
okay, so at what point...
That was one thing they told us on set, though, was that they, like, studied whale behavior and movement patterns.
I'm sure it, you know, the movement patterns, whatever, sure, I'm sure that was fine. But it's... So at one point, Chris, like, they're like, you know, they've been attacked by this whale, and they're, like, you know, desperate, and they're adrift at sea, and then, like, a long time later, Chris Hemsworth is like, oh, my spidey sense is tingling, the whale is back, and then, like, other people are like, why would a whale be fucking following us? That makes no fucking sense, and I was like, oh, this movie just took an interesting twist, now he's paranoid, But no, it actually did turn out that the whale was just, like, following them around the Pacific, which makes no sense.
No, exactly. And it didn't really happen that way either, which, like, I'm not a proponent of, like, well, if you're going to do a real story, you have to do it the real way. Like, I don't give a shit about that. My problem is that if you're going to take a real story and you're going to change it, you have to change it to make it more interesting, not less. And pulling from Jaws 4 The Revenge is not a smart move. Like, it's so stupid. I was actually moaning at that point because when the whale showed back up, I was like, what the fuck? And what really bothered me is that there's a really interesting story in the true story of it, and they cut out the most interesting moment, which is once the boat was going down, the captain and the first mate, who are the two main characters in this film, had an argument about which way they should go to find help. And the captain wanted to go to some islands nearby, and the first mate said no, because there are cannibals there. We should go the whole way back to South America, which was a shit ton further away. Now, in retrospect, it turns out that that was totally wrong. There were not cannibals on that island, so the captain was right, which was like the first right call in the book he had made in hundreds of pages. So that was actually really interesting, but the movie just completely cuts that out, and they immediately are like, well, we have to go back to South America.
It's really unfortunate, too, because having that moment could have really helped the relationship between Pollard and Chase, which is, like, one of the saddest, thinnest elements of the movie. It's like you couldn't think of a more bare-bones way to present that. Like, look at this guy in fancy clothes. He's from a whaling family, so could have whatever he wants. Then look at this schlubbier-looking guy who just happens to be gorgeous, but he can't get what he wants because he doesn't come from a whaling family. It's like they say Chris Hemsworth, and then they say it over and over and over again, and it never means anything.
Well, also, Chris Hemsworth just never works as an underdog. He's too dashing and handsome, and it just, you know, it doesn't work for that. Like, he's a very good looking man. I don't ever believe him being in the scrappy underdog position.
It's like that moment in the trailer when, what does he say? I don't think it actually plays out this way in the movie, but in the trailer it's cut where, you know, like the creepy cousin guy, he's like, say you're afraid, and he goes, I will not. Like, he's a robot, you know?
Yeah. I think they cut that line, but he basically is staring down someone putting a gun to his face, and he just won't do anything. And I'm like, why is this not even exciting?
It's so,
like,
weird.
The score kept being like, da 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 da. I was like, no, I get that I'm supposed to be afraid. I understand that, but I'm not feeling it. And I think, for me, a big part of the reason that it wasn't getting me was that, one, they cut the characters down so much it's hard to care, but two, the geography in this movie is garbage.
Oh my god.
The action geography, I didn't know where we were on
the
boat.
Well, say what
most
you
of the
said
time.
To me the other day with how they presented in the book, which I thought was one of
this
the
is
greatest
true too.
Things.
So the action scene geography doesn't work, but then on top of that, they keep doing a title card that just says how many nautical miles they are from stuff, which means fuck all to me. I don't understand, like, how far a nautical, like, I get that it's a mile, but I mean, you know, there's no, I'm not drawing a comparison. But in the book, they had a map that was literally like, this is where this happened, this is where this happened. I thought, you are a movie, and a book had more visual storytelling on that element than you did. Like, that's shameful.
Yeah, I don't think the movie does a really good job of conveying sort of the isolation and the desperation of the situation. I mean, these people are, like, literally thousands of miles from land, like, by themselves at sea. You should feel that. You should feel, like, you know, claustrophobic and terrified. Instead, like, you know, you just get, like, the standard, like, shot of, like, a ship. And then
and
the only reason
with,
that you know that they're isolated is because the title cards, like you said, are like, oh, by the way, they're, like, far from things. But you don't feel it.
Even without the geography, when you look at them and how skinny those actors got, you should feel hungry yourself, you know? That should make you uneasy. And oddly enough, I barely even processed, you know, how long they were stranded at sea, what kinds of things they really had to consider doing. Like, they really, you know, took
real
out
abruptly.
The... What?
Like, in the book, when they start eating each other, it was a really big deal. And in the movie, it just kind of happens. Where they're like, well, so-and-so's dead, we just move on.
Yeah, that's pretty much how they treat it.
But yeah, so I guess we should wrap. Final thoughts on In the Heart of the Sea?
I don't know. I, like, feel bad not recommending it, because this is a case where, I don't know.
Because,
like,
it's
we
so
said,
special, the popcorn and Prosecco?
We've been to the set. I think Ron Howard is a very kind, nice man, and I don't know.
And Chris
Hemsworth
starved himself for you, Perry.
Well, I mean, that is another thing, that they put so much into making this movie, and the sets were so beautiful,
look,
but...
That's admirable.
Really, I don't think I would recommend spending money.
Adding a big weird whale effect is not making a good movie. Like, this is a bad movie. It's, like, depressing how they took a really interesting story and made it so stupid and dull.
I don't think it's a bad movie. I think there are very admirable qualities about it, and some of it is...
You sound like you're trying to set your friend up with this movie. Like, no, he's, like, super nice. He's super nice.
Well, it's because, like, I want the cinematographer, Anthony Dodd Mantle,
yep.
Right? He shot this? Mm-hmm. I think he deserves some serious credit. So I kind of feel bad being like, yeah, this movie isn't worth your money, so just skip on his beautiful achievement. But no, this movie is not worth paying
yeah,
for.
Yeah, I gotta say, I thought it was, like I said, I mean, there were times when I was interested or amused. It's really cheesy, but I was like, sure, I'll go with it. But overall, it's okay. So there's another movie coming out called The Revenant. It is also about a bunch of one-dimensional characters who are stuck in nature and nature being the worst. And it's, you know, you don't need to watch both of them. And the other one's prettier, so watch the other one.
All right, I'm going to fail at the segue game right now because there is no way to get from In the Heart of the Sea to Joy.
Well, she also suffers.
She does suffer.
She does suffer quite a bit, over and over and over again.
She has a white mop instead of a white whale.
There's even really a tragic. Boat scene!
Okay.
There we go.
She has a boat scene. There is a boat scene.
We have, like, all the segue now. They're all garbage.
Yeah, those are kind of fails still. All right, so Joy. Here is the IMDb synopsis. Joy is the story of a family across four generations and the woman who rises to become founder and matriarch of a powerful family business dynasty. That's not really
That's a shit synopsis. That is not what this movie is about.
So this movie is very specifically about Joy, and it's set within her family, but I would not say it's a story about four generations
It's
a family business dynasty. It's actually the exact opposite of that. Joy is someone who is a talented inventor since she was young, and she's always put down for various reasons, and finally she comes up with this brilliant idea, and then for many, many more reasons, things don't quite work out for her, and it's all about how she perseveres, and she makes her invention the famous thing we know it to be today, which is the Miracle Mop.
Which they never say in the movie. They never call it the Miracle Mop.
You know, they don't say it, but you do see it at a point.
I think it's some legal issues.
It's right before she goes on
QVC. Well, she's an executive producer, though, so it seems weird that they couldn't clear the name.
Maybe they changed it so much that she said, please don't call it that. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, the whole relationship is very confusing, because I don't know if you guys got this email, but when the trailer came out...
I got this email. I know what you're talking about. Go ahead.
We were asked not to call it the Miracle Mop movie and not to call it a biopic, so I was like... Why can't we do that when she is so involved? But anyway, overall, I know I'm in the minority on this. If you've read anything about the movie since it started to screen for critics, you're probably aware of it, but I like it. Most people don't. I like it. I found her story, I found it very inspiring. And I kind of appreciated the off-kilter presentation and how kind of almost zany it was. It was a very unusual spin.
But see, problem is it's like almost zany. But like, I like her story is inspiring, but I felt like her story and David O. Russell's approach fight each other.
Well, I think the two elements that fight each other, which we should actually clarify considering it's the first scene of the movie, is David O. Russell has an obsession with soap operas in this movie where it's Joy's mother is very into watching soap operas, and we see a clip from the soap opera, and as, I don't want to spoil it, but anyway, the soap opera is interconnected with scenes of the movie all throughout from start to finish. That was insanely disjointed to me. I did not like that. It didn't bring anything to the movie for me, but in terms of just how, especially Joy's father, who's played by Robert De Niro, and his wife, just like how heightened and stylistic their behavior was, like how in-your-face that stuff was.
But then Joy's
for me
worked. That's the thing. It feels like people in this movie aren't in the same movie. It felt jarring to me. But beyond that, my issue with it was that I feel like when you hear Joy's story, it sounds like the story of a pretty normal woman who decided that she was going to work hard and overcome the obstacles in her life, which included a lack of education, zero support from her fucking family, and having to raise children and hold down a job while trying to launch this product. And, like, instead, David O. Russell doesn't want it to be about a normal woman. He wants it to be about a woman who is basically more than a woman, which felt kind of insulting to me. I go into this a lot in my review, which is on Pajiba. It's called David O. Russell Mansplains the Female Experience for All You Dumb Broads, in case you want to look it up. We'll also have a link in comments. But my thing was, like, the whole movie, and I know that O. Russell's thing is this kind of misanthropic idea where there are, like, some special people and the rest of everybody else sucks and is assholes. And I get that. That's kind of clear in all of his movies. But in this one, it felt particularly sexist because, like, Robert De Niro is clearly a sexist, like, womanizing, pandering douchebag or patronizing douchebag, but then we're still supposed to like him. Like, the way the camera treats him and the way the movie treats him, I think we're still supposed to appreciate him.
I don't think we're supposed to appreciate him at all. I think maybe in the beginning you're almost supposed to appreciate him through Joy's dedication to him and just what she does for him as her father. But as the movie goes on, I think it villainizes him.
But, like, I don't think the movie thinks it does because of the way it ends.
Vilifies, right?
I don't, either.
Vilifies, whatever. I said both, so it counts.
But what surprised me was, like, I've been told my review of the movie seems very angry, and okay. But, like, I didn't come out of that movie angry. I came out of that movie annoyed because I was really bored. Like, I was astonished that with this cast and this story, that so much of it just did nothing for me.
I want to talk about what makes it boring. So Perry was talking about how how the soap opera parts feel a little bit disjointed. But I feel like it doesn't end there. Like, the whole movie feels very, like, scattershot. Like, it feels like it's being told by someone who has trouble focusing on one thing at a time. And that kills any sense of momentum that this story would have. Like, every time it starts to get somewhere, he's like, oh, wait, let me jump back, like, you know, 5 years so that I can, like, show you a really long flashback. And then it's like, oh, wait, let me, like, jump over here with, like, this subplot that doesn't go anywhere. There are, like, 8 subplots in this movie, which is about 7 too many. Like, every character has, like, a little arc, which, you know, in theory, it sounds like, oh, that's good. They're, like, fully fleshed out characters, but they're really not because they're all, like, really, they're, like, these little, like, aborted arcs for, like, 2-dimensional characters. Yeah. So it just feels very, like, meandering. And I did find that, like, every time I started to kind of be like, oh, okay, yeah, I like where the story's going, it'd be like, we have to stop, and then we have to shoehorn in a subplot about her mom having a relationship with the repairman. Like, that, where did that come from? What was the point of that? There wasn't any.
Well, like, I thought the relationship she had with her husband was really developing into something, into her ex-husband, was really developing something into something interesting. And then the grandmother's voiceover, which cuts through the whole goddamn movie explaining everything, says they were the best divorced couple in the world. And I was like, oh, so we're not going to develop this. That's just it. And it's like, he's still around, but they make no further attempt to develop their relationship. And I thought that was really disappointing because that was interesting. And that's the thing, it kept cutting itself off at the knees.
As much as I like this movie, like, I can't refute any of the points you just made, because those storylines do go absolutely nowhere, but the reason that I enjoyed those parts of the movies is just because it kind of filled out the world a little for me. I kind of just enjoyed spending time with that family and seeing their weird dynamic, and I don't know, when I saw the mother with the repairman, like, I cracked a smile, you know? It didn't lead to any, like, big revelation about how her life changed, but it was just, like, a nice little touch to me.
I think that's a big difference, then.
But I feel like there's a way to do it that doesn't, like, kind of just feel like it's intruding or derailing the storyline. I will say, though, let's talk about stuff we liked about this movie. I actually did think Jennifer Lawrence was great. I don't think it's her fault that the movie lets her down. I think she puts in a great, like, gutsy, gritty performance. She is about 10 years too young for the role.
Yeah.
But that's also
her performance is good, but it seems like an acting student doing it, just because everything about this movie suggests this character should be older than they try to make her in the movie so that it fits Jennifer Lawrence, and it doesn't jive.
But with all of that in mind, I do think that she, you know, she clearly worked really hard on this performance, and she's really good. Like, I found her really watchable throughout. Like, you really believe her when she goes to these places of, like, desperation. Like, I thought she was fantastic, and it made me all the sadder that I didn't like the rest of the movie around her, because I think that she is not getting enough credit for the work that she does in this movie for reasons that are kind of outside of her control.
Well, she did get a Golden Globe nom. That's,
I was
going to
say.
I mean, it should be worth more than that, yes. But
do we think this is a comedy?
Oh,
referencing
the
Golden Globes
now?
Apparently think it is.
It is not a comedy. It is even less of a comedy than The Martian, which is also not
a comedy.
Well,
that's like That's like a notorious problem with the
Golden Globes. Yeah, hashtag category fraud. But I mean, like,
they can't quite settle that.
Like, I think that's my problem is that Perry, I feel like if I had liked The Family, I would be more on your side and be like, maybe it has these problems, but I still enjoyed myself. But I hated this family. Like, there are so many scenes of her family just being like, well, you're worthless. We should have known this would go to shit. And I was just like, I don't want to be here for this.
Well, like, I should clarify that I did not like every member of her family, but I just kind of enjoyed feeling like I was in the middle of all their altercations. Sure. Her family consisted of a handful of pretty terrible people. I mean, that sister character was just the worst.
Well, exactly, to the point where she is a cartoonish villain. Like, she may as well be wearing, like, a Disney, like, cowl and crown.
I wouldn't say cartoonish.
I would.
Her character in particular, I think, could have definitely benefited from a little more depth, just so we had a clear understanding of her motivation and what she was actually trying to achieve by doing the things that she does towards the tail end of the movie.
I mean, the family is horrible, but like so is the family in The Fighter, but they're still kind of like fun to watch. I just didn't find this family fun. I just found them unpleasant.
That's a better way to describe it. I think I did have fun watching them. Maybe having fun watching them is a better way to describe it than liking
different
them.
Different structure, so different final thoughts, folks, I guess. Joy.
What'd you say, Christy?
Final thoughts on Joy?
I recommend it. I had a lot of fun with it, but, you know, admittedly, at the same time, I know why I've read Christy's review, and, you know, it's spot on. It's pretty accurate, but I had fun with it, so that is why I would recommend it.
I would say
Angie's making stink face for those of you that need to know that at home.
I'm making like the I just sucked on a lemon face. I mean, this is not like the worst movie I've ever seen, but I just don't see any good reason why anyone needs to see it. There are a lot of movies out right now. A lot of them are even really good. Don't waste your time with this one.
Yeah, I can't think of a single reason to tell someone to watch this movie. Like, Jennifer Lawrence is good in it, but she's better in other movies, so fuck it. I can't in good conscience tell someone to watch this movie.
Edgar Ramirez is really
hot.
On that
note. Yeah,
yes, there you go.
That's something.
But he has Point Break coming out the same day, so maybe you could just watch that instead.
Yeah, I feel like your expectations are probably right on for Point Break as opposed to Joy.
All right, so that is a wrap on episode 95 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You know the drill. Please go over to iTunes where you can subscribe to the podcast and also rate and comment. We have our Facebook page where it would be great if you could like us. And then we have Twitter where you can catch us at Popcorn Prosecco. We have our website too, popcornprosecco.com, and then all three of us are all over the internet. Christy, do you want to go first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko, KristyPuchko, and I write all over the internet, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is pnemeroff. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
That was unlucky.
No, it was bad seamanship.